From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 7th day of July, 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Banks. We'll check crop conditions in Illinois, Indiana, and Minnesota with the state statisticians and hear all about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner right here on this Wednesday edition of our program. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today finished 8¾ cents lower at $5.31 a bushel. November beans at $13.27¼, up 22¼. Bean meal up $2.50. The bean oil 91 cents higher. Wheat futures in the September down 3¾ at $6.22¼. The hard red there at $5.84½, 3/4 higher, and the spring at $8.07½, up 14¼. Live cattle futures at $120.60, $1.80 lower for 100 pounds. Feeders at $159, down $1.62½, and lean hogs at $100.40, down $1.95 on the afternoon. Crude oil for the day at $72.25 a barrel, $1.12 lower. The diesel fuel or heating oil down $0.015 at $2.08¼, and gasoline on the RBOB about 2¾ cents lower at $2.20½. Natural gas $3.58¼, down $0.05¾, and ethanol futures 3 cents lower at $2.35. Gold futures at $1,806.40, up $12.20 for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at around 34,527, about 67 points higher. Jackie Vakes from TotalFarmMarketing.com now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day. Hi, Jackie. Thank you very much. It's been a couple of down days in Chicago. I'd like to know, first off, how support and resistance has changed, if at all.
Oh, it changed a lot. Let's just put it that way. Yesterday pretty much destroyed everything that we had and went through almost all of the support prices that were existing last week when we talked. So September, we've got support at 543, resistance at 602, DEIS 517, resistance at 561, and March corn 520, 566 is resistance on beans. For August, 1284 for support, 1403 resistance. September, 1288, 1403 for resistance. November, 1264, 1408 for resistance. On gold in August, we've got 1674 support, 1823 resistance. Dow Jones, same as it has been lately, 31661 support, 35091 resistance. Dollar, 88¼ support, 91.73 resistance. Bitcoin, 27451, excuse me, for support, and 34720 for resistance.
What's the fun money been up to?
As we would all guess when we saw what has been going on, there's an awful lot of selling that's happened on the funds. Yesterday was just straight out fund selling. They sold 35,000 corn, 24,000 beans, 14,500 wheat, 13,500 meal, and 12,000 soy oil. They were buyers of beans last Friday, but otherwise they really haven't been active buyers since the 30th of June. 30th of June, they added a lot of positions and they've just been shedding them ever since.
Any news on the export front?
There is. When you look at wheat exports are running 16% behind compared to a year ago. Last week was 13%. So they've lost a little bit. We need to average 16.6 million bushels a week to reach the USDA projection. Corn 69% ahead of a year ago compared to 70 last week. And there we need 49.5, and I think we should make that quite easily. Soybeans 54% ahead of a year ago versus 55 last week, and we only need 6.5 million bushels of beans to be able to make the USDA expectation. So I think that we'll get there too.
You've had about a week to explore the acreage and grain stocks figures. Anything in there that you want to make sure we recall?
Well, I think it's important when you looked at the acreage numbers, you know, that we still had over 2 million acres of corn to plant and over 9 million acres of beans. Now, out of that 9 million acres of beans, I believe most of, you know, 4 million it probably is double crop beans, and they may be in the ground. You know, this they stopped taking the survey around the 10th. And so, you know, we don't really know. But those are important things. I think the other thing that we need to look at, too, is as we shift around here now, we've got the USDA report coming up on Monday. And I'll give you my estimates, Todd, and that kind of ties into what you just asked, because there are definitely changes due to the acreage situation. When you look at corn yield, USDA is still at 179.5. I used 178. And even though we had the acreage that we did, that still only raised the yield, the production, to 15,041 compared to 14,990. So it wasn't significant. And my ending stocks, I actually took old crop ending stocks down to 1,032. I made adjustments on exports as well as on ethanol on old crop. And then that bled over into new crop, and that dropped it from 1,357 down to 1,257. And I think it actually could be even tighter than the 1,257, depending upon how aggressive the USDA is willing to change exports. I really didn't do a lot of changing on exports for this next year just yet, because they're usually fairly slow to do that. On beans, I took the yield down to 50 from 50.8, and production came in at 4,336 compared to 4,405. And old crop ending stocks I left at 135. New crop ending stocks I've got at 125 compared to 155 from the USDA. And that basically is just, so we went down 69 million bushels in production. And if you leave the crush alone, although I think we might lose some of the crush, you come in at about 125. I truly expect we could see 119. That's something that kind of over the years has been a target point, but we'll see when we get there, I guess, on Monday. Wheat production, 1905. They had it 1898, so very, very close. And ending stocks, I came in at 670 versus 770, and that's primarily a shift down on the spring wheat, because spring wheat, I believe, is going to be hurt severely. Argentina corn and beans, I left the same at 47. And Brazil corn, I took it down to 90. I think it could actually be more like 89 or 88, but USDA usually isn't quite as aggressive because they're at 98.5. That safrina corn has just taken a beating this year. We'll talk about that a little further down the line here. But beans I left at 137 in Brazil, and I think that's a pretty good number.
So you see really well-supported markets, probably, given your ending stocks, your carryout for the 21-22 marketing year for corn, soybeans, and wheat.
Yes. Yes. And I'm sure people are saying, well, how is that possible when you saw the markets go down 90 cents yesterday on beans and 40 on, you know, 40 on corn? And, you know, we have to recognize that it isn't just us in these markets. There are a lot of moving components. We have the black boxes, which are very unemotional in contrast to us. And they trigger at certain points. We could see that very easily. You know, you hit 100-day moving average, you can see the triggers and what happens in the marketplace. A weather report comes out, and what happens in the marketplace. I think that I've been around long enough to know that you can see rain on the radar. That doesn't mean it necessarily makes the ground. And in talking to some of our clients from North Dakota, you know, they're saying, yeah, we got a quarter inch. You know, well, I tell you what, the wind has been severe. Talk to one of our guys in Nebraska today. He said that there's some areas out there that have green snap because the winds were so severe. And so there's just a lot of different components here. I'm looking at the fact that USDA was very conservative on their export numbers when they projected 21-22. And for good reason. You know, we can never count on China, and China has been the driver in a lot of this. And so that's why I don't think that they're going to necessarily up exports that much on 21-22 on corn. But, you know, I still think, you know, we're in a position here, unless something really changes, where 178 might be a pretty darn good number, or maybe a little high.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vakes is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 10% of the corn across the nation is now silking, 14% is the rolling five-year average. The condition of the crop is 64% good to excellent, split 50% good and 14% excellent. Last week, those numbers were 51 and 13, and last year they were 54 and 17. 29% of the soybeans are now blooming across the nation. 24% is the rolling five-year average. 3% of that crop has set pods, and that's right on pace with the average. The condition of the soybean crop, 59% good to excellent. That's down 1 percentage point from last week and down from last year's 71% good to excellent at this same time. 45% of the winter wheat crop is now harvested. The five-year average is 53%, and the condition of that crop is 38% good, 9% excellent. That's down from 39.9 last week and 41.10 in the previous year. Now here are updates from the statisticians in Minnesota, Illinois, and Iowa.
This is Rebecca Alter, statistician for the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office. Apart from southeastern Iowa, little to no precipitation allowed farmers 5.7 days suitable for field work. Field activities included spraying post-emergence herbicides and harvesting hay. Moisture levels vary widely, as subsoil moisture levels in northwest Iowa rated 84% short to very short, while levels in southeast Iowa rated 84% adequate to surplus. Spotty rains benefited crops, but farmers reported more moisture is needed, especially in the northern two-thirds of the state. Across Iowa, there were scattered reports of corn silking. Iowa's corn condition rated 62% good to excellent. 39% of soybeans were blooming, 6 days ahead of the five-year average. 5% of soybeans are setting pods, 5 days ahead of normal. Soybean condition was rated 59% good to excellent. Oats headed or beyond reached 94%, with 50% turning color, 4 days ahead of normal. There were scattered reports of oats for grain being harvested. Iowa's oat condition rated 55% good to excellent. Pasture condition was rated 39% good to excellent. Producers reported heat-stressed livestock. Some producers had to start supplemental feeding. For the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office, this is Rebecca Alter.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Temperatures were slightly below normal last week, and precipitation was above normal across most of the prairie state. Overall, the state averaged 1.35 inches of rain, more than 1/4 inch above normal for this time of year. The average temperature for the week was 74.2 degrees, almost 1/2 degree below normal. There was an average of 3.4 days suitable for field work last week, and topsoil moisture supplies were rated 3% very short, 13 short, 67 adequate, and 17% surplus. Wheat harvest reached 87% finished, compared to 79% 1 year ago and 82% for the five-year average. Corn is now silking on 14% of acres in Illinois. That is 5 points ahead of 1 year ago, but 8 points behind the five-year average of 22%. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was reported as 8% very poor to poor, 27% fair, and 65% good to excellent. Soybeans are now blooming on 22% of acres, compared to 20% 1 year ago and 23% normally. Soybean conditions were reported as 10% very poor to poor, 27% fair, and 63% good to excellent. For Illinois hay, the second cutting of alfalfa is now 50% finished, compared to 45% normally. Finally, pasture conditions were rated 9% very poor to poor, 34% fair, and 57% good to excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office. With reports of scattered precipitation during the week, farmers saw an improvement in some crop conditions while other conditions remained unchanged or declined. There were 6.2 days suitable for field work. Topsoil moisture supplies rated 28% very short, 50% short, 21% adequate, and 1% surplus. Subsoil moisture supplies rated 24% very short, 49% short, 26% adequate, and 1% surplus. Corn silking reached 5%, 2 days ahead of last year and 3 days ahead of the average. Corn condition declined to 41%, good to excellent, compared to the previous week's 43%. Soybeans blooming reached 38%, equal to last year and 1 week ahead of average. Soybean condition declined to 44%, good to excellent, compared to the previous week's 45%. Spring wheat was 97% headed, that's 10 days ahead of average. Spring wheat coloring reached 21%, that's 9 days ahead of last year and 1 week ahead of average. Spring wheat condition increased to 35%, good to excellent, compared to the previous week's 29%. Pasture condition was rated 16% very poor, 31% poor, 39% fair, 14% good, and 0% excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the Midwest. On this Wednesday afternoon, let's talk with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking the time today. What are you watching of most interest in the weather across the Corn Belt?
Well, for the most part, it's all about what's going to happen over these next several days with these little waves of energy going across the northern plains and the northwestern Corn Belt. It does look good that we are going to see at least three waves of energy moving across some of this area. And I think many areas are going to get some rain, but it is still a drought in that area, and dryness in that region, what means low humidity, which means these disturbances, even though they're advertised to do fairly well on the forecast maps, I'm not convinced that the moisture is going to be homogeneous across those areas. So when these storms fire up, I'm willing to bet it's going to be more isolated good rain than it's going to be generalized good rain. And so for that reason, I think there will definitely be some areas of improvement, no question about that. But I do question the kind of coverage that we might have with these waves of energy coming through. The way it looks at the moment, a different set of counties are impacted with each wave, which basically means that when we get done with this first 5 days of the outlook, maybe the first week, we're going to have a little bit of improvement in a lot of areas, but we're not going to do much for the long term. And subsoil moisture is not going to be altered. And all it's going to take is a few 90-degree days, and we're right back to where we are now. So I'm not convinced that we're going to see a tremendous amount of improvement in these areas.
So the Minnesota, the North Dakota, the northwestern part of Iowa still are under the most pressure for needing rainfall. And they'll get some, I take it, out of these waves?
Yes, absolutely. Everybody will get something. I would say the majority of the rain over the next 7 days is going to run from maybe 3/10 to 9/10 of an inch in general. And then there will definitely be some 1 to 2 inch amounts scattered about. But I really think that those 1 to 2 inch amounts are going to be a little hit and miss. Some areas are going to do a lot better than others. And I may be just a little conservative, but I aim to do that on purpose because of the low humidity in the region and the fact that it's hard to break a drought, especially in that particular part of the country when we don't have a good flux of moisture coming northward from the Gulf of Mexico. And if it was a different scenario where we had strong flux of moisture coming northward, I'd feel a little bit different. There's definitely some moisture out there, there's no question, but I don't think it's well distributed. And it's interesting to look at what happens immediately following this rain event in the second week of the forecast. So starting about midweek next week, we're going to see a lot of warm air coming back across those areas again. And it's been my experience that when we're in a dry environment like we are right now across that area, and even if we get 1 or 2 inches of rain, and if we turn right around and go back into the heat right afterwards, there's not usually a good amount of positive improvement to the crops. In fact, some of them that are most drought stressed would want to try to take full advantage of the moisture that has just fallen and try to redevelop, you know, try to spur on some new development. And then if it goes hot and dry while it's doing that, it really gets stressed more seriously than it was before. And I'm a little concerned that that might be a result of what we're going to see over this next week. It's not that we're going to be widespread 100 degree temperatures again next week, but we're going to be back into the 90s and we are going to see the rain disappear again. So this is definitely a short-term bout of improvement, and it's just a big question in my mind how much improvement's actually going to occur.
What about the last half of July?
I think that this buildup of heat that's going to occur in the plains next week, actually as we go closer to mid-month, is going to become a significant buildup of warm air that will eventually work its way to the western Corn Belt in the last 10 days of July. Now, I'm not sitting here predicting 100 degree temperatures for Iowa and, you know, Missouri and Minnesota, but I do think that this the heat that I mentioned for the Dakotas for next week will eventually be in the western Corn Belt, but it's probably a week away later than what will occur next week in the northern plains. So I think we'll finish July with some warmer weather and some drier bias conditions, mostly west of the Mississippi and especially on the Missouri Valley. And that'll be the area that really gets heated up. And I think you'll see some expansion of this dry region out of the Dakotas and Minnesota and down into Kansas and parts of Missouri. It'll be a slow process, but we will see the rains diminished in those areas next week. And then the following week is when we'll start warming up. And that last days of July is when we'll really peak out.
I understand from our early conversation that most counties will get some rainfall in the early part of this month. What happens in the second half of July for the eastern part of the Corn Belt?
I think it'll be status quo, and not quite as abundant on the rain. We'll see a little less frequency on rainfall, and we'll have a short-term bout of warming there too, but it won't get nearly as warm as it will farther to the west. There will be a northwest flow pattern during the latter part of July over the eastern Midwest that will perpetuate some periodic rainfall and keep those temperatures from becoming excessively warm. So the bottom line, in my opinion, from the Mississippi River east is going to be a continuation of really good environment for crop development. We should have enough moisture in the ground by that point in time from this first week of the outlook that the crops will have plenty of moisture to work with if it does turn a little drier, but the warmth will really stimulate some more aggressive crop development.
Hey, thank you.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and helped us to wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.